Good morning. Welcome to hour number two of Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. Producers Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, and Jason Croft is at the controls this morning. Well, we're also pleased to have back here on the program once again, Rich Warren. He writes about consumer electronics for the News Gazette newspaper. Over the years, has written for a variety of different publications, writing about things like audio, video, home equipment. And we thought, it's been a while since Rich had been here, so we thought it would be a good idea to ask him back, particularly because in, I guess, about 6 weeks, the big digital conversion is happening, 17th of February. Yeah. The TV stations, all full power broadcast TV stations in this country, will stop broadcasting analog and start broadcasting digital. Now, it certainly has been something we've talked about. It's been all over the place. But we thought, well, you know, there might still be some folks who have questions about what this means for them. Maybe also some people who either have bought a new television, they're thinking about buying a new television. So, you know, any and all of that kind of questions about home consumer electronics gear, but particularly if you have questions about the digital conversion, give us a call. And I know Rich will do his best to give you an answer. 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. It's good to have you here once again.
Yeah, I guess we don't have to worry about it in Illinois because Rod Blagojevich has outlawed digital television in Illinois.
I had not heard that.
It's a news story, but I'm the scoop. No, actually, we do have to worry because it's a federal law and it will happen. But what I wanted to say to start off with, the thing I get a lot of emails because of the News Gazette column, and antennas are agnostic. That is, antennas don't care whether it's analog or digital. All the antenna cares about is the frequency, the wavelength, the channel number of the signal. That's all that matters. I went out to the big box stores and they have all these boxes labeled high definition antenna, digital antenna. And I'm thinking the antenna doesn't care what is on that carrier wave. All it cares about is the wavelength of that carrier wave. And immediately people start saying to me, I don't understand your column. What's this thing of wavelength and frequency? Basically, if you look at a VHF antenna, the ones we've had, either the rabbit ears or the roof antenna, it's long. It has big elements. Those little rods are big, and the rabbit ears are tall, ideally somewhere between 28 and 35 inches. And that is VHF because the wavelength is long. UHF has little short wavelengths, I mean really tiny, high-frequency, short wavelength. So you need little tiny pieces of metal to receive it, some no bigger than your index finger. And this is what matters. It also makes it easier to make an indoor antenna because you don't need these long rods, these tall rabbit ears. There's one exception, of course. That's our own channel 12, which because of a number of circumstances becomes channel 9. Now channel 9 remains VHF. There's one station in Chicago that also remained VHF during the changeover. However, channel 9 is generally high enough that if you live within 25 miles of channel 12's antenna, which most people in Champaign-Urbana do, a good UHF antenna will probably pick it up. I'm using a UHF antenna 20 miles from Monticello, and I'm getting superb reception on channel 12 with a UHF antenna. So it depends where you live and where the antenna is pointed. Now, I live in an area that's ideal for most TV reception because three of the local stations are in a straight line from my house. So channel 3 is first, channel 12 is second, and WAND, which was channel 17, is third, all in a straight line. Mm-hmm. If you live in Urbana, it's not quite that simple because then channel 3 is due west, and then channel 12 is southwest, and channel 17 is a little more south-southwest. So it gets more complicated. Then, of course, channel 15, we're talking the old channel numbers now, is due east of Champaign-Urbana. Fox is northeast of Champaign-Urbana, east of Rantoul there. And so it gets kind of complicated. So what you want is a UHF antenna that's not real picky about being directional. And there are a lot of them out there that you can get that are not particularly directional. And most of the UHF signals from the new digital channels are powerful enough that you can get pretty good reception on most of the local channels with a simple UHF antenna, preferably one in the attic or outdoors. Depending on where you live and the structure of your house, because UHF doesn't like penetrating walls all that much, you can get good reception with an indoor antenna as well. But don't be misled when you go to the store, because you don't really need a hotshot VHF antenna. You need a really good UHF antenna. And if you have troubles with the VHF, then of course you need a small rabbit ears or something for WILL television, which will become channel 9, is channel 9 in digital at the moment, and will stay that way. And I just should say the reason that happened is because UHF, to get where it's going, requires a lot of power. A lot of power. WCIA, formerly channel 3, now 48 or 49, whatever it's going to become, is broadcasting with 1,000,000 watts. On UHF. WILL TV, I forget the power, but it's like 300,000 watts or less, because VHF is more efficient to cover the same area. Mm-hmm. So for WILL television to have stepped up to a UHF channel, which they were offered by the FCC, would have cost a fortune in a new transmitter, electrical power, etc. And since most of the donors out there aren't going to increase their donations to pay for it, they had to find an economical way to continue to offer the service without having to go all new equipment and huge power increases, et cetera. And frankly, now that they've got the bugs worked out, Channel 12's signal, or what is going to be Channel 9 signal, is superb. And we have a lot of phone calls. Last thing I want to say, don't get hung up in channel numbers, because it's very clever what they've done. Digital television is intelligent. That is, the signal goes out, and it tells your TV, hi, I used to be channel 12. Forget that I'm channel 9 now. You tune in channel 12, and you're going to see channel 9 digital, even though you're not tuning in channel 9, okay, because you're used to seeing channel 12. So it figures it out for you. So I just simply go to 12, 12.1, 12.2, whatever. It's going through channel 9. I don't need to know that. So you don't have to remember the new channel numbers, because the TV and the transmitter talk to each other basically. Well, the TV doesn't talk to the transmitter. The transmitter talks to the TV and says, I'm the old channel 12. So when they tune in channel 12, this is what you're going to tune. Yeah. So it's pretty clever. And it even tells you, you know, the kind of transmission, the resolution of the transmission. Most of the new digital TV sets will show you the resolution, that is, whether it's true HD or 720, or whether it's a standard definition or whatever. It tells you that. It even tells you the length of the program remaining. So it's great to see if you've tuned in on time or whatever. So there's a lot of information that the TV can display if your TV does that. Most of them can do that. Also, one last thing to know, as NPR has been announcing today, they've run out of coupons for the digital converter boxes. If you are lucky enough to have got your coupon or have the digital converter box, the one real inconvenience of those boxes is that you then need an extra remote control, because to tune the TV, you need to tune the box, not your TV set. So you set your TV to a fixed point, whether it's your video input or your channel 4 or whatever, and then you have to tune the box. But then to change the volume on the TV or any other settings, you'll go back to the TV remote control. So that's why I recommend that people, if you can at all afford to actually get a new TV, you're much better off in terms of convenience. And also, once you see an HD picture, even on a fairly small screen, you don't want to go back to what it used to be. If you watch any of the nature shows on Channel 12, on WILL TV, or any of the good dramas on the commercial networks that are now done in HD with true 5.1 surround sound, you don't want to go back to that little 4x3 low definition that you've been watching all your life, because it's just so spectacular to see TV like a movie. It's just phenomenal. So if you can afford a new set, and I know these are not the times people want to rush out and spend $800, $900 on a new set, but gosh, it's really impressive.
And one of the things, and you've certainly pointed out in your columns, is that over time the prices of these sets have significantly come down, and I guess we should expect that even over the next couple of years, chances are probably the prices will continue to come down.
Certainly, and right now, because just like the car companies, the TV manufacturers discovered they have warehouses full of TVs, and the Christmas season was not as exciting as they hoped, there are going to be some price reductions, and certain dealers in town may be going out of business, so they're going to be desperate to move merchandise. So there's going to be some very good price erosion if there hasn't been already. If you're noting the ads, just watch the Sunday supplements in the papers. And by the way, if you're willing to deal with a web merchant, you can save another 10 or 15% off the prices of the big box stores. So there are deals to be had out there. And there are also some very good secondary brands that are reasonably good quality and have been around long enough to know they're not going to disappear tomorrow. Vizio is one of them, and there's a couple of other brands that are not your first-tier brands, but certainly deliver a pretty good TV set. So Olivia is another one that a friend of mine just bought, and he's thrilled with it. It's a year old, working perfectly. So there are secondary tier brands. And as I've said in the paper, as you just alluded to, in 1994, I bought the top-of-the-line Sony 32-inch Trinitron XBR squared. Oh, it was the greatest analog TV ever built, and it had a great picture. And I paid, I think I got a discount because I was writing about it, but I paid like $3,000 for this set. For $3,000 now, you can buy a 50-inch high-definition TV with phenomenal picture, 50 inches, and just no comparison. Yeah. And you can even get a plasma set for $3,000 now at that size or near that size. So TVs now are so much better. And then to get a 32-inch TV, you can get a good one for $800. That's better than that 32-inch I paid $3,000 for in 1994. Yeah. So the prices and the quality, because even so-so high definition looks better than the best of the old analog sets.
Rich Warren is our guest this morning. He writes about consumer electronics for the News Gazette and has been following this field and writing about home audio and video for a long time now. And if you have questions about the digital conversion, you have questions about antennas, you have questions about televisions, any and all of that, I know he'll do his best to help you out. Well, the lines are full, so we'll get right to it, starting out with first caller in line, and that's someone in Champaign, and line one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
My question is pretty easy. I want the definitive answer. Which is better, more practical, more reliable, plasma, LCD? I'll hang up and listen.
All right.
I'm drawn between the two. I just want to know which is the best, most reliable, least expensive to fix, and all those things involved. Thank you.
Okay. Well,
do you think? There is no definitive answer. Plus, the paradigm changed this year. If you had asked me a year ago, there would have been no question that A, plasma delivers the better picture, and B, that in longevity, they're probably about the same, although LCD might have had a little bit of, because the fluorescent tubes, the cold cathode illumination, might last a little bit longer than the plasma cells on the plasma set. Then Samsung changed everything by coming out with LCD TVs that use LED illumination, light-emitting diodes, for the light source rather than the fluorescent tubes they've traditionally used. These change two things. First of all, LEDs last virtually forever, so the longevity is extended. Not that you'll care, because by the time the LED burns out, you'll be buying a new TV at some point. And secondly, LCD TVs, liquid crystal displays, have always had a problem with black level. That is, when a scene goes black or in a night scene or whatever, you never see true black, because what happens is the LCD itself is just a little window or like a little shutter, and it opens and closes very rapidly via the electronics. The trouble is when it's fully closed to create black, some of the light source, those fluorescent tubes leak around the shutters basically, and you never get true black. You always got a deep gray. So in dark scenes, you never got the true intensity of a really great picture. Well, with LEDs, because they are instant on, instant off, they can pulse the light source. So when it turns to black, they can turn the light bulb off, basically. And therefore, it's true black. So not only are they closing the shutters, you know, having the LCD close, but they can also briefly blank the light source itself. So you can get true black from an LCD. Of course, right now, there's over $1,000 premium for these sets. Obviously, in 2 years, they'll be the same price as everything else. But now they're, you know, and everybody's going to follow this lead. I saw them at the Consumer Electronics Show 3 years ago when I was there. I mean, they've been around, but they're finally getting onto the market because they're difficult and expensive. They won't save you much electricity because it still takes as much power to light all those LEDs as it does to the fluorescent tubes. But so giving you a definitive answer, I think that LCD sets tend to be a little more trouble-free because of the design. However, plasma sets may still have the edge, and especially the Pioneer Kuro, K-U-R-O. Those, all the audio, or video files, I should say, not audio files, but video files, consider the Pioneer Kuro to be the best plasma display, bar none. And because Pioneer is having some economic problems, the prices have come way down on these sets. They used to be way up in the stratosphere. Now they're not all that much more expensive. Now Panasonic makes a decent plasma set. But about a year ago, I was told that somehow Pioneer needed to unload last year's model of Kuro sets. They showed up in Sam's Club at some ridiculously low price. If you were there the right day, they had like 30 of them, and they were gone. So keep your eyes open for the Pioneer Kuro. If you want plasma, that's the one to get. And most people agree it's better than any LCD set on the market. But other than saying absolutely one way or the other, plasma pretty much solved the burn-in issues that it had that shared with cathode ray tubes. If you had the same image on the screen for too long, it would burn in. They've pretty much solved that problem, but you can, in fact, abuse a plasma display. There are some instances where you can damage a plasma display where you virtually cannot damage an LCD display, and electronically at least. So there's your main difference. As far as longevity, I think you'll get 10 years out of either one, really. If the set's built right, if it works the first year, it'll probably work for 10 years. So,
well, have you had the I promise you, I got other callers I want to get into, but have you had the opportunity, say, to put a plasma and an LCD set side by side, same signal going into them, same picture, look at the two side by side?
Yes.
And so you'd say, I would say one or the other, look to me, one or the other looks better?
Oh, I was at the dealer in Evanston, Audio Consultants, where I buy most of my stuff. And I'm not getting paid to plug this, but that's where I tend to shop. And I had the exact basic same set side by side. Now, I bought the LCD because it was $1,000 cheaper than the plasma. That's basically was my decision. If I had that $1,000, I would have bought the plasma, no question. Now, it wasn't a direct comparison because the plasma was 2 inches larger than the LCD. So it's a slightly larger screen. The plasma is not as dramatic. It tends to be more muted because it's a little more accurate. So the plasma screen in a very bright room, for example, is not going to look as good as LCD. It depends. You know, if you have a home theater, then you should have a plasma. But in a normal room, you really need to dim the lights to get the most out of your plasma set. But it definitely has more accurate colors. I mean, they aren't as bright and vivid because they're more accurate. And the blacks, definitely. We really see it come true is those dark scenes, detail is so intense, and the black is so black compared to the LCD. But for 90% of the people buying a TV, it just doesn't make much difference.
Okay. We'll go on here. Next, talk somebody in Monticello on the toll-free line. Line 4. Hello.
Is that me?
Yes.
Okay. Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I watch almost exclusively public television with rabbit ears. No cable or satellite available. I was at one of the best big box or whatever, and the guy tried to sell me the amplified antenna, and I think I heard or read in your column or somewhere that a chevron-shaped UHF is probably the best design for a UHF indoor antenna. And I one other question. I've got several converter boxes hooked up, and I've noticed that I have to have the TV volume really high to get even half of the volume potential with the cable box or with the converter box volume control. So I'm wondering if I've hooked something up incorrectly or what the problem might be there.
I'm not sure you've made an incorrect connection, because it's strange. On my 19-inch digital set, which doesn't have a converter box, when I switch from channel 12 analog to channel 12 digital, the same program, the volume drops by half, and I have to ramp up the volume. I am not sure exactly why this happens. Perhaps one of the TV engineers could explain that, but I've experienced the same thing on a digital TV. As far as the antenna, if you want a directional antenna, the chevron shape certainly gives you the directionality. Also, though, a bow tie antenna, either one bow tie or four of them stacked up, will work just as well. And frankly, if you're mainly watching public television and you're in Monticello, the cheapest pair of rabbit ears will work just fine, because you're next door to WILL's tower and it's channel 9, and that rabbit ears can deal with that. So if you don't want to go out and buy a UHF for the other stations, you'll certainly get perfect reception with your rabbit ears. I really wonder about these amplified antennas, because in a lot of cases, all they do is add more noise to the signal. They put a simple little amplifier circuit in there that's not ultra-high quality, and it's just a gimmick, and they can charge you more. and I actually almost got sued by the maker of one of these antennas because I mentioned that brand name and saying it was a gimmick, and they threatened me with a lawsuit. So I sort of backed down. So I don't mention names anymore, but the only time you want to put an amplifier on an antenna generally is if you have a roof antenna or an attic antenna with a long cable run to your TV set. Like, say you got the antenna up on the roof and the TV's in the basement, and you lose 2 or 3 decibels of signal going down from the antenna, or maybe 5 dB of signal because of the coax cable. You put a little amplifier up at the antenna, which amplifies the signal so there's no loss. It compensates for the loss in the cable going to your TV. But the better thing is to have an antenna that actually receives the signal better than putting an amplifier on a lousy little antenna, which doesn't really add a lot to the quality. And I can, you know, I've seen this time and again that it really doesn't help the picture quality.
The people at the store really push those amplified, but obviously they're more expensive. So
yeah, there's a lot more profit in those antennas. Let me tell you, there's one brand that's a lot of profit. So.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thank you. And we'll go on. Next caller is in Eureka, line 2. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I have 3 questions. You said on the remote that you could not use your remote to change the channels on the digital television adapter.
Well, if you have a remote that's a learning remote or a universal remote, there's a chance you can program it to operate the digital adapter, but in some cases that's not possible and you end up with 2 remote controls.
If you just have the remote that came with it, then you can't use it, is that right? The remote that came with the television, for the channel changing?
If the remote that came with the television is not a universal remote, no, it won't work the box. Now, some of the adapter boxes, if you pay a few dollars more, you get a universal remote with your adapter box, and you can teach it to operate your TV set.
Mm-hmm.
But it all depends on the box you've chosen and your brand of TV.
Okay, another question. I have as you were talking about the amplified antennas, can you still use your old amplified antenna to receive a digital signal? I live about 15 to 18 miles. The towers for the Peoria TV stations are out around 474, which as a crow flies is maybe 15 miles from Eureka. Can you still use the old amplified antenna?
You can, as long as it's both VHF and UHF,
yes,
you can
it
use it. Yeah, it should work for you.
Oh, okay. And the cost of a small digital television, I keep hearing amounts such as you gave, $800 to $1,000, but I don't know if I heard you, or I thought I heard someone else say that the 16 to 18-inch digital televisions were down to about $400. Is that true?
That is true. From $300 to $400, you can get a very good 18-inch digital TV from a brand name, and some of the house brands are even less expensive.
An old-fashioned, I guess this is self-evident, but a VHS tape would not operate with one of the new digital television. A VCR would not operate, an old VCR would not operate with the new digital televisions. Is that right?
No, actually, most of the digital TVs still have an analog input. And so if your VCR has a direct video output, you should be able to put it into the analog video input of your new TV, and it will do the conversion to display it on the screen. You won't get a, quote, digital quality picture, but you will get a picture.
But you have to put it in the analog input, is that right?
Right, and most of the digital TVs, I know both of mine have analog inputs on the back.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thank you. We're about midway through this part of Focus 580. Our guest is Rich Warren, writes about consumer electronics for the News Gazette, and every once in a while we ask him to be on the program to talk about home audio video. We thought this time it would be a good opportunity to have him on to answer any questions people might have about the digital TV conversion that is almost upon us now after having talked about this for, I don't know, how many years?
I don't know why they chose February 17th. There's some reason, but why not Valentine's Day? Why not Groundhog Day? I mean, why they chose such an arbitrary date? There are so many possible interesting dates they could have chosen. And the 17th, I don't know, this has been coming for so many years. They kept changing the date. It kept slipping. We were supposed to do this 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. But the television industry and the set manufacturers couldn't get enough product out there to satisfy folks. And before you take all these calls that are blinking, I want to point out one other thing. If you have cable or you have satellite right now, you don't have to do anything. They will continue to provide you with an analog signal. However, don't be too complacent. There is no law that says they have to continue to provide you with that signal for X number of years. There's no law that I'm familiar with. They may have made some agreement. But 3 years from now, Comcast or Mediacom could say, sending analog signal to people is very inefficient. We're going all digital. and you're going to have a digital TV.
Yeah.
The satellite companies, as long as you maintain your existing box, your set-top receiver, you're okay. But in a few years, the satellite companies will say, we're not going to have analog outputs on our set-top boxes anymore. It saves money, and also the film studios don't want an analog output because you can copy from that. So we're going to have boxes that only have digital outputs and only work with a digital TV. So don't be too complacent, because anywhere from 3, 5, 10 years down the line, it's not specific, but don't be surprised one day when you wake up and see the headline in the paper, cable company switches to digital.
Yeah.
It's not impossible. It's not going to happen on February 17th.
All right. Well, let's talk next with someone in Champaign. This is line 3. Hello.
Oh, good morning.
Yes.
I live in Champaign, a couple of blocks south of Westside Park, and I'm not able to pull WILL in, which is slightly irritating because my father, who lives in Philo, has absolutely no problems with it, using the same antenna and the same digital converter. I suspect a big part of it is the fact that this is a lot of trees around here, and those don't do great things for TV signals generally. But my main question is to ask whether the kind of channels and level of signal I'm getting now will be the same as when the switchover happens? Because what I was thinking was that right now the TV stations are having to split their power between maintaining the existing analog signal and putting out their new digital signal. And then once the switchover happens and they're able to put all of the power at the transmitter to the digital signal, whether that will improve the range. And so whether I should wait until February 17th in order to see, okay, what's my baseline, what channels am I getting, what channels am I not getting, and then go from there, or whether I could take the channels that I'm getting right now as sort of a baseline and say, okay, do I need to get a new outdoor antenna, do I need to improve my antenna system?
Well, they're not actually splitting their power. They have two separate transmitters. They have two separate antennas. If you go look at the tower for WILL or WCIA, which is due west of town near Seymour, and look up, you'll see one set of rings near the top, which is the old VHF radiator, and then you'll see a separate set of rings a little further down, which is the new, whatever the new channel number is, with the new transmitter. One transmitter can't drive both. They have separate transmitters. So at this point, until recently, some of the stations like WCIA were not operating at full power on their digital channel. They are now. I mean, this is sort of the test run, and they've got to get the exact parameters they're going to have on February 17th. So at this point, all the stations that I know of are full power digital, and that's not going to change on February 17th.
Okay.
So whatever signal you're getting now is probably the signal you're going to get. Now, there could be minor differences if they decide to remove the old antenna for the other channel they were on, and there's a reflection off those rings. And there'll be subtle differences. But in general, what you see now is what you're going to get.
Okay. It is quite frustrating with WILL because I know we'll get a very good analog signal coming in, and this might be a good segue to talk about the differences between analog and digital signals and the cliff effect, but I'll leave you to do that. And thank you for the information.
All right. Thank you.
Well, you know, that's very interesting, and I wrote about it in my column. Is it this week or next week's column? The cliff effect, there were very many competing digital TV systems, or actually HD TV systems, and then they became digital TV systems back in the late 80s, early 90s. I went to see them all as a writer. And different ones had different strong points. Ideally, in the digital world, the idea was it was a cliff. I mean, you got perfect picture until the end, and then suddenly there was no picture, period. You never got a bad picture. You only got yes or no. Didn't work out that way. Now there's a zone. It depends on the station, the terrain, et cetera. It could be 5 miles, 10 miles, whatever, that the picture starts to break up. It turns into little blocks. It's called blocking. And it starts to break up. The sound mutes immediately, which is really annoying. You know, you're in the middle of the drama, and you find out who committed the murder. And suddenly, the sound mutes, even though you can still see pieces of the picture. Where with analog, the picture deteriorated slowly in the snow, but you kept hearing the sound until the picture was totally gone. So what's happened now is there is a cliff effect, but it's not as the way they originally envisioned it. There is an area where it starts to break up before it disappears, but the breakup is almost unwatchable. So in that effect, it is a cliff. But if you're getting good channel 12 analog, you should be getting good channel 12 digital. The frequencies of channel 9 and 12 aren't that far apart. The power for channel 9, the new digital channel, is pretty high. And It surprises me that you're not getting a good signal at the same location, whereas Philo is almost due east of the tower, just a little bit north and east of the tower. You're, of course, north, a lot north, and then east of the tower. So I'm not sure why you should be having problems if you're getting a good analog signal. Generally, if you get a good analog signal, you should get a good digital signal. There may be, you know, on the fringe areas, but you're not in a fringe area. So,
one thing I want to mention here, if people continue to have questions, I'm sure that they will. People don't get in all their questions this morning. There is a program that we will be broadcasting on WILL-TV, a program called Digital TV Antennas and You. And there will be two opportunities for you to see this. That'll be Thursday, next Thursday, the 15th, and that will be at 7:30 p.m. Then it will be rebroadcast the next day, Friday, January 16th at 9 p.m. So that would be another source of information about
antennas. And I'll be on that show, I believe.
So. And, okay, Rich Warren will be on the show. And in the meantime, we'll continue to talk with folks here and go next to a caller who is in Paxton, line number one right here. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes, hi.
We live about 7 miles west of Paxton, and we have the antenna on the roof of the house, and we have the converter boxes all set up. And with analog, we have sometimes good reception, sometimes not so good, sometimes really bad. It seems like it depends on the weather, I suppose, because it changes from channel to channel. With digital, we have all or nothing. So when it's not good, it's nothing. And I'm concerned about that because sometimes we would make a decision on, you know, watching a show. It's a little snowy today, but it's something you really want to watch. And it's just not available to us now. So what information do I have to have about my antenna? Do I need a better antenna? The antenna, I think what you've talked about, a chevron shape, must be what we have because it looks like a chevron. But I'm real concerned about what happens after I don't have the choice of analog anymore.
Well, you have three options. You can get a more powerful antenna. The important thing is, do you have a rotor on your antenna so you can aim it at the stations?
I have a rotor, but I don't think it's working. It hasn't worked for years, so it just sort of, you know, vaguely faces south.
Okay, you're going to want to fix your rotor or replace it so you can actually aim your antenna at each station because that will dramatically improve your reception. That's probably cheaper and easier than replacing the whole antenna, which may not help you if you can't aim it at the stations, although from where you live, all the stations are south of you, but some are southeast and some are southwest. So there's a range where you would benefit from aiming the antenna. You're also in the place where this is one place where an antenna amplifier might actually help you if you put an antenna amplifier at the antenna to compensate for the loss in the cable going down to your TV set. That might help somewhat as well. And that's pretty inexpensive. I think it's like $50 for the amplifier and then, you know, $50 to have somebody put it in if you don't do it yourself. So,
yeah. So even the amplifiers that you were actually concerned about before that might just add noise, they might be good in this particular situation.
Well, no, because the amplifiers I talked about before are part of an indoor antenna that are integral to the antenna. This would be a specific amplifier for putting on the outdoor antenna. It's a whole different, it's a much higher quality amplifier usually.
Oh, I see. And then I had one other comment just to make, and that is that we have two remotes now, one that belongs to the converter and one that belongs to the TV, and they both have volumes on them. And I was just wondering if maybe the person who called in with the volume problem, what we've done is we've cranked up the volume full blast on the antenna or on the remote that handles the converter. And then that way, when we use the volume on the TV remote, it's normal like everything else.
That's probably the way to go. You've made a good suggestion. It all depends on the connection, how you've connected the box to your TV set and the various specific box and specific TV. But generally, yeah, I would run the box at a high volume level and then adjust your TV to the volume you want. That's probably the best way to do it.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you.
All right, thank you. Next call here is in Spring Bay, line 4. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Well, we had a TV meltdown just before Christmas, and so I got out the Consumer Report, and I think the 37-inch Sony LCD was listed as a Best Buy. I went out and got that. I think it was about $1,200, and got one of those antennas. It's a flat one. It's amplified, and we're just getting great reception. We're north of Peoria in the River Valley, and we're getting Bloomington, Channel 43, just as sharp as can be. So now, does that Sony have that better black that you were talking about earlier? And I'll hang up and listen. Thanks for the program.
No, that particular Sony is a conventional LCD. It's a very good set. I have a Sony myself, slightly larger screen. They make a good TV, although my tuner went bad, 6 months old. The tuner went out. Sony had it repaired fairly quickly. It took about 2.5 weeks to get the part, and then the guy was over instantaneously and put the new one in. Sony doesn't have its own repair facility in central Illinois. They hire a company in Bloomington, or is it Normal? I guess it's Normal, to do the repairs, but they were very cooperative and speedy about it once the part came in. You know, there's a lot of good sets out there, and again, you have good luck with that flat antenna. If you buy an antenna at a store, which you can return it, then you can try it. Just keep buying antennas, taking them home until you get one that you like. Just keep returning them, because as long as you keep the packing and you don't, you know, make it a mess out of it, most stores are quite willing to take it back if it doesn't work. So you can try out a number of antennas. Also, those of you who live in a rural area have a much better shot at good reception than those of you who live in town, because people live in town, even in a private home. Various structures, like they're building these tall buildings in Champaign now, signals bounce off those buildings. Now, with digital, that's not supposed to make a difference. But if you're behind the building in the shadow, you're not going to get very good reception. That's just the way the laws of physics work. And so in town, if your neighbor does remodeling and somehow puts a steel filing cabinet in the wrong place in his or her home, it could affect your reception. Not commonly, but it's possible. So whereas you live out in the country, there's nothing blocking your view of the tower, so to speak, even if you can't see the tower, other than your grain silo. So you're much better off if you are out in the rural area. You have much better shot at good reception. And if you're in town, it gets much more difficult, even with digital. Digital was supposed to solve all the problems of in-town reception. There's no ghosting and multipath and all that kind of thing. But there are still issues with signal blockage and cancellation, and it can't fully overcome obstacles and walls and big steel buildings. So.
All right. About 10 minutes left in this part of Focus 580 with Rich Warren. He's consumer electronics writer with the News Gazette. We're talking about digital television and what's going to happen here with the conversion coming up next month. And if you have questions, you can call us 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Next caller is in Mahomet, line 2.
Hello.
Yes.
We live in the country near Mahomet. And I took your advice and had Jesse Swindeman install an attic antenna, and it's improved our reception 100%. And now we have a new digital TV and an old analog with a converter box. I'm able to compare them. And so I'm pretty much made the conversion to the TV reception. Now I'm trying to make the transition to recording, because I was used to recording programs and watching them so I could skip through commercials or watch them at a better time. And I have a couple of questions about that.
Okay.
The first one is, I bought a dual tuner DVD VCR, and when I was shopping around, I couldn't find any that would let you preserve the closed captioning on recordings. They say that digital recording will not record the closed captioning, and so I've been recording on with VHS tapes on that recorder, and if I take it into my old VCR and watch it on the old TV, I can pull up the closed captioning. So I'm wondering, do you know why that is, and if there's anything inherent about digital that they can't keep the ability to pull up the closed captioning?
Well, you've stumped me on that, because it's something I haven't followed, but there is an issue, is that the closed captioning is handled very differently in a digital TV than analog TV. In an analog TV, the closed captioning is carried by an analog signal in the blanking range of the picture. In the old TV sets, if you had the vertical hold slightly off and the picture would roll and you see the big black bar with a little white streak go by, actually that area is used for information such as the closed captioning in modern TVs. Digital TV doesn't need that anymore. Sends the closed caption as a digital bit stream with everything else, so there's a little extra stream that provides the captions. And it's handled so differently that I can understand why the two TVs would not be compatible with the closed captioning. So I can't explain to you exactly why one works and one doesn't, except that it's handled very differently in each system, and that probably provides some explanation with your to your problem.
Okay. It just seems strange to me that the digital tuner DVD VCR says it will not record it, but it is on the recording because when I put it in my old one, I can pull it up.
Well, it should record it because if it's recording the digital signal, it's recording all the bits they're sending, basically, and it's in there. It's mixed in with everything else. So it's a matter of pulling it out of there. I think maybe that's the issue, is that it doesn't extract it, that it doesn't have the chip in there that extracts those bits from the rest of the digital that's going through there. It's an incredibly complex, huge amount of data that's pouring through there. The size of a digital broadcast is enormous as far as the amount of data that's actually being transmitted. So it's a very impressive system, and I can understand that maybe they didn't want to spend the money, or it was difficult to actually put the circuitry in that extracts that particular bit stream.
Okay. I just think it's unfortunate for people who need the closed captioning.
Definitely. But, you also might want to check online if you want to Google, I'm sure if there's a foundation for people with visual disabilities, et cetera, they probably have addressed this issue, and they might have some information that would help you figure out what's going on and how to circumvent it.
Oh, that's great. That's a great suggestion. My other question is the transition to recording. I've always used VCR, VHS tapes. And now I'm trying to learn how to use the DVDs, record on DVDs. So I'm really confused about the RW plus RW minus RW plus R minus R and all those. Can you give kind of an explanation of how to know which you want?
Well, if I was the emperor of the universe, I probably would have executed the companies and the people responsible for these two different systems, because
absolutely,
there's no reason for them. They claim that DVD plus RW or plus R was a little more universal than minus R. The minus R system was Pioneer's original system, and it works swell.
Okay.
But Sony and Hewlett-Packard didn't like that because they had to pay royalties to Pioneer. So they came out with a different system, so they wouldn't have to pay Pioneer royalties. That's basically why they exist. In the non-re-recordable, in the plus and minus, just the R without the RW, there's hardly a lick of difference. It's when you get into the RW, they become less compatible. And there are still some older players that only play one or the other. All new players, anything you bought in the past 2 to 3 years, are play either system, play back either system. Doesn't matter to the player what you've got.
So the RW means you can record over it, right?
Right. That means rewritable. Yes.
So does that mean only after it's finalized you can still go back and record over it, or you can? Because I've noticed with just the plain R, if I haven't finalized it, I can erase what's there.
Right, but the RW, you never quite finalize it. It's always be able. You can record over, I don't know how many hundreds of times, but there's a limit. But you can keep recording over it because you never finalize an RW disc, as far as I know.
Okay. One last question: If I record to be able to see things at a more convenient time, and sometimes I record something because I want to keep it. Is there any type of DVD that's better if for longevity to keep? To archive something?
Well, yeah, except that a lot of the stores here don't handle some of the better qualities. But any brand name, if you get a Sony or a TDK or a Maxell, generally, not absolutely, but generally, they're going to last longer than if you go to Staples and buy the Staples brand of DVD. Because basically Staples goes to China and says, look, make us a gazillion DVDs and make them cheap. And they don't really care which factory makes them, whereas Sony and TDK and Maxell still have an interest in their brand name quality of the disc, and some of them still own their own factories to make these, and they're actually still made in Japan or Korea, where the production quality standards are a little bit higher. So as long as you stick with a brand name, and I think you'll recognize most of the brand names, but certainly Sony and TDK are two of them, you're going to end up with fairly high-quality discs that might... A DVD should last you 50 years.
Oh, okay.
So they actually last longer than CDs, theoretically. There's always a chance that it's going to be a problem. But if you store them properly, keep them out of light, keep them out of heat. You shouldn't store them above 80 degrees. You shouldn't store them in a place where sunlight hits them. But, a nice shelf in a cool part of the house, they should last a long time.
Great. One of the features about the minus R that I discovered last night is that you can actually program it so you can label it, put titles and things on it, which I don't think you can do with the Plus Rs.
Yeah, frankly, I'm a little foggy now. It's been so long since the big competition between the two, but certainly there were advantages, little tiny things like that between the systems. I suppose if you have the right recorder, you can probably label an R, a Plus R, but it depends on which recorder you've got and which system you're using. So, but it's nice to be able to label them, I agree.
All right. Well,
thank you very much.
We'll go on here. We'll see if we can get one or two more. Next, Newman, and that's line three. Hello.
Oh.
Yes.
My problem is similar to some of the other people that live in the country. I've got an outdoor antenna. Slightly different is that 10, 12, 15, and 17, I'm talking the old channel numbers here, are intermittent. Is that just a rotor problem, or do I need a new antenna? And I have upgraded to the converter box.
Well, you know, you might want to check your cable that comes in from the antenna. Those coaxial cables don't last forever, and a lot of times they get a little bit of moisture in there, and it becomes intermittent. And so check the cable and its connections, and it's pretty cheap to just put a new cable in if you can.
Yeah, but I'm talking like for hours at a time. You'll have 10 but not 12, and then later you'll have 12 but not 10, that sort of thing.
Well, again, it could be either the cable or there may be an element on the antenna that's loose and it's touching another element, and sometimes when the wind blows, it's fine, and then the wind blows the other direction and it's not fine anymore. So take a good eyeball look at your antenna and make sure everything is tight and not touching where it shouldn't be, where the elements are all still parallel rather than, you know, bent. And then check the cable connections. You'd be surprised. Even difference in channels between, if it's moisture, it can be transmitting one channel and not another because of the way the capacitance changes in the cable. So, you know, check your cable, your physical coaxial cable, and see if that's still working right. And a good antenna person could check that in a few minutes with a little box, for that matter. But check that out, and it might solve your problem.
Will do. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. And we'll go on next to line number one, and this is someone in Bonneville. Hello.
Yeah, good morning. Great program. Rich, I'd like to ask you a question. After reading your article about servicing TVs in the area, do you think in the future that when you make a purchase, it's going to be predicated on who you know is going to be able to service the TV, or is it just going to be another item that you throw away when it's inoperable?
Well, I think service is going to be increasingly important, and I think that there's going to be a price divide. It just troubles my soul no end to think of people throwing away these TVs because of the environmental impact. That even though LCD TVs are environmentally much less hazardous than the old cathode ray TVs, there's still a lot of lead and trace elements. The pigments that make up the LCDs are not particularly healthy, and you really don't want to throw these things away unless you absolutely have to, unless the whole set is dead. And I think at some point, I'm hoping Consumer Reports starts following this kind of thing, is when you buy a set from a company, how good their service is. You know, the old jokes about, I mean, Maytag went really downhill until they were bought out by Whirlpool. But the joke was, you know, the Maytag has such great service and it didn't even need it. So, yes, you do want to keep track of service. That's really important. And you want to make sure that the company that sold you the set, I'm not talking about the retailer, but the Sony or Toshiba or Panasonic, also has qualified service in the area and will service your set.
Well, the reason I was asking is years ago, when you usually had an analog set, if something went wrong when it was 2, 3, 4 years old, you could usually find somebody locally to repair it. But it seems now that because of the companies are buying each other out, and then they're constantly coming out with newer models and other models are being discontinued, it seems like when you spend $1,000 on a TV set, especially a new digital one, you think to yourself, well, maybe 3 or 4 years down the road, I should be able to find somebody locally who will be able to repair it and wait for a week for somebody to come from some town 30 or 40 miles away. And I just thought to myself, maybe the servicing of the unit is going to be so important when you go to purchase it that that's going to be one of the qualifying necessities.
Well, that's something to consider. As I wrote in a column a few weeks back, a fellow who bought a TV, I forget the brand now at this point, but he took it into a local, very competent service facility, and they said, okay, here's the part you need. We'll order it. And the TV company, the manufacturer, said, we won't sell you the part. You're not an authorized servicer. You can get lost. And he tried then to go to them and say, I want to buy this part for my TV, and they wouldn't sell it to him, which I don't believe is legal, but they got away with it. So basically, you're at their mercy. And even though there are a couple of competent service technicians in town here in Champaign-Urbana, they may not have access to the parts for these TVs. And these TVs now, it's not where you could go open a catalog and order the part. They're one-of-a-kind parts that have to be obtained from the manufacturer.
Sure. Well, I know you've often spoken or written in the column that you don't believe in extended warranties. And, of course, the manufacturers as well as the retailers are adamantly advocating that you buy it. Because if something is wrong, they'll just go ahead and replace the set. But I know that you've written that they're not really necessary because there's pretty good reliability built into the sets now.
But, right. If they're going to fail, they're going to fail during the manufacturer's warranty, usually. 95% of the time, they're going to fail in the first year. After that, if they're working, they're probably going to keep working for 5 years or more, and then the extended warranty won't mean a thing. So that's, I mean, I don't go to Vegas either. I don't gamble.
Well, Rich, thanks for the comments on it, and I think we should have another program like this before February 17th that's most helpful to the consumers.
All right. Well, thank you very much for the call. I'm sorry to say we're going to have to stop here. We have a couple of callers we cannot take. In the meantime, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, there will be a program next Thursday night at 7:30 on WYLL-TV dealing with a lot of these issues, and I think Rich said that he was actually going to be a guest on the program, Digital TV Antennas and You. That's next Thursday, January 15th, 7:30 p.m., and then it will be rebroadcast the next night, Friday the 16th at 9. And in the meantime, if people have questions, can they email you at the paper?
They can email me at my personal address, although I can't guarantee a response. I don't get paid for answering the email. I just do it as a public service. And that's Hi-Fi Guy, that's H-I-F-I-G-U-Y, at M-C-H-S-I.com. And so I will try to answer your questions. I can't guarantee to answer your questions. Mostly I like to do it in print in the paper in my column generally so that everybody can share from the – because I get an awful lot of questions and an awful lot of intelligent questions. And I want to end with one thing is that one reader wrote to me saying, I feel so dumb. I'm such an idiot. Help me. And I just want to tell that reader and everybody else in the audience, you're not dumb. You're not an idiot. These things are more complex than they should have to be. And we're going through a major transition, and you should never feel that you're at a – it's your fault. So,
Rich Warren, he writes about consumer electronics for the News Gazette. You can see his column in the paper. It's on Mondays in the paper. And there's this little show we call
– The Midnight Special.
Oh, yeah. When is that on?
On WILL-AM 580, Saturdays at 2 o'clock. Folk music and farce, show tunes and satire, madness and escape.
All right. Rich Warren, thanks very much.